You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Morning, Tri-State. This is Lisa Seif at Radio Rehab, WEOA, The Pump. We're excited again to be back and introduce you to people that are trying to share their recovery and their experience, strength, and hope with the community about drug and alcohol addiction. And today I have an interesting woman named Lala to introduce to you. She's got an incredible story, grew up in Las Vegas, has been all over the country practically in her addicted lifestyle, which started at age 10. That's hard to believe. She's been in a relationship for 3 years and is celebrating recovery. So I think this is going to be somebody for us to meet and talk to. And I think I really appreciate, Lala, you coming and sharing with us. I've just in introducing you and hearing your story, I'm amazed that you're sitting here alive. That's a miracle in itself. We don't like to think that drugs can take people to such dark, dark corners of the world. What happened to you? Let me introduce you at this point. This is Lala.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lala. My real name is Laura. Well, I've come today to try and help share my experience, strength, and hope with those that are still suffering and those that are still that are in recovery as well, and try and enlighten them that there is hope in recovery and there is hope in life.
Yeah.
That there is a light at the end of that tunnel, and that you can do it if you just stay focused and you just don't get discouraged and give up and don't pick up. What happened to me was, well, I would say I was just on a pity pot for a really long time, and I took a lot of years of everyone's life by blaming and accusing others for their mistakes and using their mistakes as a fuel for me to use.
Justification for the next round.
Yeah, and living life with no consequence and no accountability and no care.
You just had that kind of personality as far back as you can remember?
Far back as I can remember. I can remember even before I actually even started using drugs, I would manipulate and use people and to get them in the palm of my hand, basically.
Wow.
Even my dad, you know, I knew exactly what buttons to push to get what I wanted, and my mom, too. So even my grandma, you know, I mean, I can remember as of 5, 6 years old, I knew to go to the store with her, and I knew exactly what to say to get the clothes that I wanted. You know, and that started a whole thing there that I just, you know, always had to be the best and look the best.
Do you think some of that's just being a girl or being a kid, or do you think being an alcoholic addict, you have just a lot more of that normal?
I think that it's a little bit more compulsive for me than it was, you know, for an average person. I do believe that, you know, shopping can be an addiction, too, for some people.
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, don't we all? But, you know, I think that I used that also, too, to cover up a lot of the feelings that I was feeling. My dad left us when I was 10, and that was something that was really what took my whole perspective of life.
Was that a turning point for you?
It was a major turning point in my life. That was we were raised Christian, Baptist, real strict Baptist. And
what's that mean?
Well,
when people say
we weren't allowed to listen to music, we had to go to Bible school. We went to a Baptist school. We had to read Bible every night. We didn't get to watch TV.
There were a lot of discipline, a lot of structure,
a lot of structure. And then when he left, you know, all that structure that had been being established in our life all of a sudden was just ripped down from us. And I didn't, you know, I thought I internalized everything. I thought it was my fault that he left because I was so close to my dad.
And did you know he was going to leave?
No. We had went on vacation, and when we come home from our vacation, we found a note hanging on the closet on a hanger, telling him that he was gone and that he wasn't coming back.
Wow.
So, and I remember the devastation in all of our kids' eyes, and my mother, she fell to her knees and cried and sobbed. And I can remember even at a point where my mom just would crawl into bed and didn't want to get out of bed and wanted to die at that moment.
Sounds like depression.
She was so depressed. Mm-hmm. She had been with my dad for 13 years and never worked a job, had always raised us kids.
So do you think for young people, divorce or when there's discord with the adults in the house, that is devastating?
Oh, yes. It's truly devastating to children because every child wants
their parents to be happy and healthy.
They want that ideal home, you know, where everyone's feel secure. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your mom and your dad at home. You know, but I do believe that, a single parent can just provide that structure.
I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. There are single parents that are doing the deal out there and really being good parents and have children that come up to be
healthy,
productive children.
I agree with you, totally.
So, I mean, it doesn't always need the two, but,
right.
you know, when you're raised from that point and then all of a sudden it's gone, that's what tears that structure down. That's what tears that feeling of hope in your life that, you know, this is what I want to be like when I grow up. I want a man. I want a husband. I want kids.
Sure.
You know, and that family feeling is just gone all of a sudden. And so I think that I searched for that for so many years.
Were you the oldest?
I was the oldest, and so I had to take care of my brother and my sister, which my sister and I are only 13 months apart, but my brother's 4 years younger. So I did do a lot of watching the kids because my mom did have to start working. She started working two different jobs. She worked for a school. In a school, she did the floors in the school to pay for my tuition to continue going to a Baptist school because it was very expensive to keep us in. And my dad was, at that time, when he left her for another woman that was using drugs and alcohol. So it was the complete opposite of what we had all been raised.
Structure you'd all been told to live by, yeah.
And so I think in my mind I might have thought, well, it's okay if your dad's doing it. You know, if that's what, maybe it's more fun to live that kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah. I think kids do think those thoughts when they see their heroes go that route.
And I was really angry with my mom for a lot of years and thought it was her fault that he left us. I blamed her. And
isn't that ironic? The parent that stays gets the blame.
The one that
not
does
the one
all
that goes
the
away.
Hard work.
Yeah, that's just
works
it's
two
not,
jobs,
yep.
goes to school.
Yeah,
tries to support us.
And the kids get mad at the one that stays because they're there.
Yeah,
it's
she's the one that had to take the initial brunt of everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
Was she a drinker or drugger?
My mom was not a drinker or drugger.
Just
still
a
this day.
Prayer. A lot of prayer.
A lot of prayer. But I think she got angry with God at that time.
Sure.
And we went to a different church. We moved to Danville, Illinois at that time. And because we were living in Covington at that time, Cedar Lake, Indiana, when my dad had left us. We moved to Danville where we were with our grandparents and closer to our family members so that they could help my mom out. Well, that was when I started drinking and drugging. When I went to sixth grade was my first year.
Sixth grade?
It's first year in a public
That's
school.
That's like 10, 11 years old.
That was when I started smoking marijuana.
How in the world did you get marijuana in sixth grade?
Well, just a girl
friends?
At my school, we ditched school one day. And she took me home to her house, and she fed me some brownies. Well, I didn't know what was in the brownies.
Whoa.
Well, all I knew is I kept giggling once I ate the brownies, and she was like, well, that's because there's pot in the brownies. And she just started giggling.
Did you know
laughing.
What it was?
I didn't know what it was, no.
So and you said, hadn't been to all those drug prevention classes,
no,
DARE and all
they
that.
Don't teach that back in...
That's true.
Back
yeah.
in the 80s, they
in the country
teach that.
Schools, yeah.
In the country schools, they don't teach that. Or in the 80s,
so you
they
just
teach that.
Ate those and something happened.
Oh, it was great. I was laughing. I just couldn't stop laughing. And then I got hungry. I couldn't stop eating.
Yeah.
And I liked that feeling. I liked that I could laugh and be happy and not feel what I was feeling. And I think that was my first time feeling where, hey, I can actually take something and I don't have to feel stuff.
Mm.
Then I started drinking. I met a guy. His name was Marty. He was a boyfriend of mine for almost 3 years. And he was my first real true love.
In sixth grade?
Yeah.
Or a little older?
Yeah.
Sixth grade.
We were sixth grade through, almost through the eighth grade. So we went out
That's
for
pretty
that.
Long term mm-hmm. for a junior high mm-hmm. kid. Yeah.
And then I moved to my mom's, or to my dad's. I went to my dad's in the middle of eighth grade when I went to my dad's house. And because me and my mom were not getting along physically, I was abusing her because of the drugs and the alcohol. I would argue with her and fight all the time. And if she tried to discipline me, I would raise my hand to her and tell her, you know, who are you? I'm the one taking care of the house. You can't tell me anything.
Is that true? You felt like you were
I was taking
care of everything?
Yeah. So, I would cook. I would clean. I would take care of the kids. I would get them ready for school the next day.
Because of her depression?
Right. Because she was working. She was
and
working.
Her work, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She worked two jobs and went to school at night.
So you didn't want anybody telling you what to do.
No, I didn't want anybody
telling
me. And
then you're drinking and drugging as well.
Oh, yeah. And nobody knew. I felt like no one could tell me what to do. I felt like I knew everything.
Mm. You think that's how a lot of kids today think, too?
Oh, well.
Like they're the boss and they don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody's home, so yeah. they have to.
And boy, let me tell you, if there are any kids listening, let me tell you, your parents know best. And, you know, that's the one thing that I really, really missed out on as a kid. Mm-hmm. Knowing, thinking that I knew best. And, man, if I, you know, I wouldn't want to say I could change it all over again because
right.
I sure would want to do it all over again. But I would really hope that my kids don't have to go through that. And that's why I try and... Now I'm trying to... I take parenting classes.
Well,
I do all different kinds.
Well, you stay in the parent role.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you're there. You're
yes.
watching.
Yes. And
in junior high, then probably high school, did it ever occur to you that you were doing something illegal, something high risk?
Well, I don't think it even... I never had a consequence or never even thought there was a consequence for my actions because my dad was doing it, so I thought it was okay. You know, I started smoking with my dad when I moved in with him.
With your father?
I smoked weed and
when
I
you were in high
with
school?
My father. Mm-hmm.
For God's sakes.
Yeah. And he said, he used to tell us, if you are going to do it, I'd rather you do it here so that I know that you're not getting something that'll hurt you.
What do you think about that? Now looking
How naive.
Because there are some parents that still believe that.
How naive. That's ignorance.
He was as nuts as...
Ignorance. That's the drugs.
Telling
the
him
drugs,
that,
telling him it's okay. Yeah.
To use
and
with your
he's
kids.
Doing okay. And I think it was his guilt, too. His guilt.
Plus, there's this mindset, do you think, that marijuana's okay?
Yeah,
there
people
is.
Do have that mindset, but you know
oh,
that nowadays,
wow.
the stuff that they put in marijuana, I mean, it's no different than crack.
And what it does to
it's
learning.
It's no different.
But parents still that mentality.
It bogs your mind.
Yeah.
It bogs your mind. I smoked weed for 24 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. I had to have it morning, noon, and night from the time I woke up to the time I went to sleep every day.
Well,
I
guess
it at
if
work,
you start at 10
I did it on
years
my way
old.
At work, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, it continued all the way through, you know, up until I was, 34 years old.
Marijuana was the steady.
Marijuana was the steady. Alcohol was the steady. Cocaine was the steady. When I moved to Vegas in 89, it really became more of the drug of choice for me. I would sell the marijuana in order to continue to support my cocaine habit.
So where did cocaine enter the picture?
Cocaine entered the picture when I got with my ex-husband. I was 16, and I met a guy that was 27.
Jeez.
I moved in with him when I was 16 out in California. We lived there for about 6 months, and I started doing crystal meth with him, and he was in the Navy. And everybody else in the house did it, and then they were all in the Navy, too. And he would leave and go out on different, you know, out on leave and then come home. And when he was gone for, I think, 4 months. And when he came home, I was really, really addicted to the meth. And I told him, I said, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to live here. I want to go home to my mom. I wanted my mommy. For the first time in my life, at 16, I wanted my mom. And I told him, I said, either you get me out of here or I'm going home. And so he said, well, let's go live with my family. So we moved. We actually went to his parents'
house. You're 16 and he's how old?
27.
You know, that's almost sexual abuse.
Right, right. But see, I was such a jerk to my parents.
They were happy to see you.
They were just happy to get rid of me. You know, they were so tired of it. The abuse, the stealing,
sure.
manipulating, lying, bringing people into their houses.
Wear your parents down. No doubt they're human. Yeah.
I wore them down. My mom was with my stepdad at that time, and, you know, physically they were just wore out. They were.
But
you
running off with a 20-something-year-old. You're 16 years old.
Well, from the time I was 13 and on, I was a full-fledged alcoholic. I would drink every day, and I would stay going 2-3 days at a time. So by the time I was 16, my mom was really sick of it.
And you were clearly in the later stages of addiction already at 16.
Oh, yeah. Bad.
Wow.
It ran my life. It ran my life. That's all I lived for was to get high.
And then cocaine. And that's
and
a whole
other... And then the cocaine was a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, and meth.
The rich man's drug. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the meth scared me. It really did. And I don't know what the difference was between the meth and the cocaine or the weed or anything else. Mm-hmm. But I think now I see what it's doing to people's lives now. And now I know what scared me then. It kept me up for days on end. I would stay up for 10 days at a time. Couldn't function. Could not function. I was probably 110 pounds. I wore a size zero. And I'm not a little girl.
And you still didn't know anything was wrong?
No. That was the way of life for me.
Wow.
That was the only way. Because I was, I dropped out of school.
No one tried to tell you, hey, kiddo, you're going down the wrong path.
No one ever told me.
You're beautiful.
No one ever told me.
No programs.
Because I ran so much. I never sat.
Yeah, ran away. That's true.
I was never in one place for too long. And so no one ever really got to know me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
You think it would have made a difference?
Would you have listened?
Would you have responded?
It might have. Because, they actually have a commercial now that's on the radio, and they say, who was your role model in your life? And who... My grandma was the one that... to this day tells me you're beautiful and you can do anything as long as you put your mind to it.
So we all need someone
and I
like
still
that.
Remember her telling me stuff like that, but I just ignored it. I just wanted to not feel stuff.
I do the adventure-based challenge program for youth first, and we work with teenagers that are the age, 15, 16. Yes, and I wonder sometimes if they are so numbed out they don't even hear the feedback or the...
It's like their minds are tuned out to it.
Yeah.
Because I see people, even adults, that are like that now,
So do you think in your case, if somebody would have kept at you and kept reinforcing
maybe if I would have felt like somebody cared.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like no one cared. Ever.
Well, I think they cared. Your mother was busy working. She was depressed. She was left by your dad.
Yeah, and I
but
drove
you don't
her
see
crazy.
That as a kid. Yeah, no. You don't see.
I
that
drove
as
her
a
so
kid.
Crazy that she was just fed up. She still had my brother and my sister to raise, and she didn't want me influencing them.
Especially once you started using.
Yeah,
and if you're chronically addicted by 16.
Well, I was already getting my brother and my sister high. I smoked marijuana with them. Oh yeah, and so I think that she had seen that, and so she wanted me just to be gone. And so when John and I moved out to Vegas, I think the alcoholism really kicked in for me. I wasn't just a regular alcoholic; I would drink to blackout. I always, whatever I've ever done, I drink in obsession. There's no happy medium for me.
Yeah, the big book says we don't drink to get drunk. We drink to oblivion.
Yes, that's me. That was me.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I drink straight vodka. I never drink any... If I drink beer, I drink a 20-pack, and...
Was the drugs still in there, too?
Oh, yeah.
So no work? Was there any work? How did you...
I worked. I functioned. I was a functioning alcoholic addict. I worked. When I was 16, I was still too young to work anywhere because my parents didn't consent for me to do anything. So I actually worked for a lady in Vegas that dealt to all the different casinos, the cigarette concessions. So they did all the different little lighted jewelry and all that stuff. And so I would work for her in her home. I would put all the jewelry together, put all her orders together, and help her do all the assemblies of all the orders. Do other little things like wrap her Christmas presents for her kids because she was spoiled. So I did all her work for her. Well, when I turned, I ended up becoming a cigarette girl at 21. But I also am
in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm, yeah. In between the 16 and the 21. By the time I was 18, I actually became a rental car agent for Dollar Rent-A-Car, and I started working doing rental car industry. And I did in rental car industry. I lied on my applications to get in, told them I graduated from high school. You know, I just lied my butt off about everything. And I ended up getting in, doing working for Dollar for almost 2 years. Then I worked to a different company for 2 years. All my different companies I worked for a little bit over 2 years.
And all of this drinking, drugging.
Still went to work every day.
And
I would do the open shift. Mm-hmm. I would do the open shift so that I could still be up from the night before and then go home and take a nap. I'd be home by 1 every day.
Nothing going through your head yet about the
destruction? Oh, this was my way of life. No destruction.
Normal to you?
Normal.
Wow.
Normal. That's what I thought life was all about.
That was normal.
Yeah. I never really had, like...
Yeah, at 10, if you're starting at 10, that's... Mm-hmm. And you were saying also that there was just something about the numbness.
Oh yeah, I love that feeling. I just
had to numb out.
I loved getting high. I loved that feeling.
So was that the only thing you knew to go for was numb?
Mm-hmm. There was no medium.
What about love? How did you have these relationships with these men?
Oh, I would say it was more sex than love. I mean, now I look back, and it was about control.
Just a means to the
end. It was about control.
Mm-hmm. Not love.
Mm-mm.
Not when you're numb.
I thought it was love.
Sure.
You know, I thought it was...
And they were using,
that's
too.
What love was all about. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They all used with me.
Wow.
Now, John and I lasted 3 years, and he was really, truly unfaithful, and I could not deal with that. And that was one thing I was committed to. I was committed to being faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't going to stand for that. You know, I deserved better than that.
Definitely.
Know? So I met a guy that was my drug dealer for the cocaine, and he told me, "Oh, you don't have to be with that. I'll be the man in your life that won't cheat on you. I'll be honest with you."
Oh my God, here he comes, the knight in shining armor.
Here he comes on his horse. Yeah.
Fix you and save you.
Fix me and save me all at the same time. And he was really good in bed. You know, so I thought that was the key. You know, as long as they could
just
they had all the qualifications in bed, then, you know, hey, he's a shoo-in. So, you know, and I know now that was an addiction, too. Sex was an addiction for me, too.
Do you think sex can be an addiction?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Not only the control part of it, but it can also... I think the control part is the biggest part of it.
You think that's the biggest part in most addictions?
Mm-hmm. The control.
There's something about
that control that you feel like you have the control of it.
Or, yeah.
Yep. Like, and now I look back and I know I had no control at all over anything. The drugs all had control of me.
Right. But when you're young,
you don't look at that.
Is this just stuff you've put together since you?
Since I've been in recovery.
Mm-hmm. And you've been able to look back and identify addictive patterns, drugs,
yes.
Alcohol, sex, men.
Well, I've done. Let's see. I went in Wisconsin. I moved to Wisconsin after I had my first child, which was in 98.
God, girl, life's happened fast for you, hasn't it?
Yeah. Mm. In 98, I had stopped using cocaine, and I was just using marijuana. I thought it was just, you know, not a drug.
During
your
pregnancy?
It was okay. During my pregnancy, I stopped.
Isn't that interesting?
At
Why?
The sixth month, because I didn't want him to take him away from me.
Okay.
I heard that they would take your children away if you used.
So you stopped.
So I didn't want them to take him away. And I thought, well, you know, 3 months should be enough for it to be out of my system and out of the baby's system.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just made a deal with yourself 90 days till this baby's born.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I have to step back just a little bit. When I was in Vegas, I did go to, I went through my windshield in 94. I was in a car accident. I was on my way to work one day and I hit a guy head on at 60 miles an hour. And when I went through that windshield, I went to the hospital. I was in intensive care for 7 days, and then I did a rehabilitation center for a month.
Jeez.
And it was my little break. You know, I was off the coke, got to do just pills. So I, you know, and
had
and
time.
Had a little time.
No running.
You know, to myself, mm-hmm. No running, you know. And when I got out of that hospital and I went home, I didn't want to go back to using coke anymore. I was tired of it. It was in 94, so I was probably about 26.
So you were starting to think then.
Yeah, I was starting to think.
Down.
Yeah. And I told the guy I was with, David, I said, I don't want to use anymore. And we'd been in it for about, We've been together, well, we were together for 6 years, so we've been together about 4 years at that time, almost, yeah, 4 years. And I told him, I said, I don't want to use anymore. I want to stay clean. Mm-hmm. And so when I got out, got back up on my feet and stuff, I decided that I wasn't going to use anymore.
Anything? So,
well, I just still drank alcohol, and okay, so I still smoked. I thought that that wasn't a problem
right,
for me.
Right.
So I stopped using the coke for a little while, and I got hooked up with a girlfriend of mine that, you know, I had been friends with, and we started doing it again. Well, I ended up getting my settlement for my check for my car accident. It was $38,000, and I started real full force back into the cocaine addiction.
You got a $38,000 check?
Check. I bought a car, bought a Honda Accord cash for $3,000, and I spent the rest on coke.
Oh, yeah. My God.
But the thing about it was, that was when I was introduced to crack cocaine for the first time in my life. And that demon truly went havoc in my life.
What was the difference for you between the cocaine and the crack cocaine? Because I don't know if people understand the difference.
I think the crack was where you smoke it, mm-hmm. and it was a lot more intense, the feeling. As soon mm-hmm. as you take the hit, you want the next one. Coke, the lines, I think it was a little bit more. I could do a line and then chill for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Not but that when I intensive would, rush.
Not intense as the yeah. hit. And that's when I liked it. I liked that.
So you
I liked that feeling because it gave me that bell ringer feeling where I didn't have to feel anything at all. So finally I found my drug that took all the feelings away and made me numb. I fell in love. Oh, yeah.
So that was crack cocaine.
Yeah. And that taste in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. You get addicted to that, too.
Is the major thing that you get addicted to, mm-hmm. alone with the feelings. But mm-hmm. you do get that taste.
Because it lets you it know never the goes numb away. Is right there
yeah.
after that taste.
It never goes away. Yeah.
For heaven's sake. So you just immediately went into the crack cocaine. And
oh,
you were
yes.
telling me there were
crazy.
Guns and alleys. And
oh,
vinyl.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
That, I think the guns came more into where when I moved here. When I moved here, I met the man that I'm with now. And he was my dealer at the time, too. I have to go back a little bit. I did go to prison because of all my running and gunning in Wisconsin. And I got 3 felonies, possession, intent to deliver.
For crack cocaine?
Mm-hmm. I also got an indictment for delivering cocaine to an undercover agent. Yeah.
So you went to prison.
I went to prison.
For
I did.
How long?
I did 14 months in the county.
Jeez.
By the time they finally sentenced me and sent me to prison, I only had to do 4 months. And they ended up letting me do an inpatient treatment program, which was the first time I was really introduced to any kind of a program, AANA, mm-hmm. any kind of recovery.
Okay, I was going to ask
now,
you.
Now, I do know, I can say that every time that I did get incarcerated, I did like the feeling that I felt when I was in there that I didn't have to use. And that's something I do would like to stress, that I was the freest I had ever been in my life locked up.
You know, I've heard one other person say that they found freedom when they were locked up in a prison.
It was crazy.
It was Jeffrey when I talked to him at Wabash. He said yeah. the exact same thing you're saying.
It's there's freedom. It's freedom.
That compulsion's
from that
gone.
Crap. Yeah.
So you are now in recovery. We have
yes.
just a few minutes left. God, we got to have you back, Lala.
Okay. I will definitely be back because I would love to share my recovery because that's the biggest part of my life today. I live my life for recovery. You know,
yeah.
I've been clean and sober for 2 years, and what finally got me to come back in was I was sick and tired. I was sick and tired of living that life, and I wanted to live.
And you knew rehab could help?
I knew that in my life that I needed something other than what I was doing. And in order for me to do it, I had to get into recovery. And I went into stepping stones.
How'd you know it was there? How do people know where to go?
My daughter was taken from me at birth because she came out dirty.
Mm-hmm.
She was clean with crack cocaine, or dirty with crack cocaine. And so they took her away at birth.
Mm-hmm. Here in Evansville?
Yes.
My gosh.
Yeah, so I was entered into the CHINS program, and that's what got me into recovery. And wow. So, yeah.
So, Judge Niemeyer.
Judge Niemeyer is awesome.
Isn't he the best?
He is the best.
Him.
And Toy.
Yes.
Toy is the bomb. I love her to
Wonderful
death.
Wonderful people. So, they all are. That.
And the why. The
all
why
that
has been.
Streeting you, all that numbing, all that. How do you deal with your feelings? You've got to come back and tell us how you deal with reality.
Okay. I can do that. I can do that because I do it. I deal with life on life's terms today.
This has just gone way too fast. There's so much more I want to ask you about you and life.
Because life is great when you don't use.
Yeah,
it truly can be.
People in our community need to know that that can happen for any of us.
Yes, it can. As long as you just, I mean, really don't go around those people, places, and things. And you go to somebody that you know is clean and they can help you get on the right path.
And you just got to find that moment of truth. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to knock you upside the
you
head.
You got to do it for you, too,
but
and Judge not for anyone
Niemeyer
else.
Knocked you upside the head.
He sure did.
So it does take something.
He sure did.
Yeah. Something sometimes has to knock us.
He was awesome. He was very, very patient with me. Yeah.
Well, I hope he's hearing you talk today because you're beautiful.
Thank
and
you.
Your recovery is strong. If anybody wants to talk to Lala, please call us here at the pump. We will answer any of your questions. Nothing is below the belt. We'll have Lala back for sure.
Definitely.
Live. When you can call in and ask her questions, she's definitely a pillar of strength and experience, strength and hope for us in this community. She's been there, done that, no doubt about it.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
And you will be back, right?
Oh,
we'll
for sure.
Back to Radio Rehab.
Awesome.
You all,
yes.
We have to sign off. I hate that because we have so much to share, but that's part of hanging on until we come back to the pump again. And until we talk.